Good afternoon. Welcome to Line 1, your health connection, and I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guest today is Anchorage physical therapist Wally Wallace and orthopedic surgeon Dr. Jeff Moore. Dr. Moore is also a sports medicine specialist. So you guessed it. Our topic today is sports medicine. To reach us, you just have to call us. 550-8433 is our local number. That's 550-8433 if you're in Anchorage. We have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And you can email us during the next hour as well at line1@kska.org. Wally and Dr. Moore, welcome to Line 1.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Jeff Moore is an orthopedic surgeon who's been in Anchorage since 2001. And besides just general orthopedic surgery, he's been very involved with sports medicine, being a team physician for several of the high schools, for the Anchorage Aces, and for most of the intercollegiate teams out at UAA. And Wally's second appearance here and is pretty much a sports medicine physical therapist, mm-hmm. is that fair to say? And also is supervisor of the Providence Sports Medicine Rehabilitation Therapy. Mm-hmm. So welcome once again. You guys are putting on a clinic. That's what got us together. You made the mistake of letting me know about it, and then we asked you to be a guest. Wally, tell us about it.
Well, we got elbowed into that one, but it's good to be here. this is our second annual. Actually, it's our third clinic. We had our first coaches clinic in 2007. And we took a couple-year break. We started it back last year, and we designed something that we're really trying to specifically reach people that work with kids in sports, really from a very early age to middle school, high school. And we've designed it to bring experts in, such as Dr. Moore, and people from different angles of a sports medicine component to help educate and actually create some continuing education credit hours for our audience, which is primarily coaches, school nurses, teachers, just volunteer parents, mm-hmm. and whatnot. Mm-hmm.
Jeff, why do we need that?
Well, I think when we start looking at the injuries that are becoming really predominant that we see, at least in our clinic, we're seeing quite a few of our younger patients in with these overuse injuries. Sometimes from poor training techniques, sometimes from just doing too much too often. And it's important for us to educate, especially the coaches, parents that are working with the kids every day. You know, we may see them when they're having injuries. We'd like to prevent a lot of these.
One other thing we might want to mention, there's a couple of things. One, for those of you who are listening, if you go to our website at kska.org/line1, you're going to have some links there that will put you to more information about the coaches clinic. But also there's another website that is called stopsportsinjuries.org, which will go over a lot of the information about the statistics and a lot of the overuse syndromes and some information about treatment and prevention, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Yeah, we can talk about that some.
Okay. Obviously there's more and more kids participating in sports, so the number of injuries would increase, but is the injury, incidence, the percentage per individuals that are participating increasing? Are we seeing more on a percentage basis?
I think we are. If we look at, certainly there are more individuals competing in sports, including especially high school sports. We're seeing those numbers increase, but we're also seeing a greater increase in the number of injuries, especially in these overuse type injuries, as these, especially our younger population.
Are kids starting earlier?
Well, I think they're starting earlier and they're sort of specializing earlier. So they're starting to participate in just, say, a single sport. When you and I were growing up, we were playing a number of sports. I can remember playing football, and then when basketball season came around, I was playing basketball, and then we went on to play baseball. And so when you do those activities, you give certain muscles, areas of the body that are getting stressed from one activity rest when you start participating in other ones. But nowadays, we're seeing a lot of people participating in just one single sport. And when they do that, we start to see these overuse injuries, and especially in some of our younger individuals where their bones and muscles and tendons are just not quite developed to handle those bigger loads and bigger stresses.
I was looking at something, actually a slide from the coaches clinic we did in 2007. And in 71 and 72, I think it was 4 million high school athletes. And then in 2005 and 6, which was the most current data at that time, 7.2 million high school and 20 to 35, roughly, between youth sports, middle school, high school. Well, I just found something this past week that now that from 20 to 35 million and from 6 to 18 years old is 30 to 45 million. So there's certainly a huge increase in volume in terms of potential caseloads that might see the doctor. But there's, I guess the incident rate is, for varying factors, people and certain injuries are unsure of in some.
Well, there's more sports. There's more kids involved in... They're starting earlier and younger, and I'm going to guess that when you start kids earlier and earlier, it's you're not necessarily getting the coaches with the same experience. It's often a mother or a father or somebody who's volunteering to help get things going. Are there some basic principles to talk about with sports injuries just for the mother and the father that are starting that we should mention, since that's what we're beginning to talk about here?
I always like to use the sort of the common sense rule. When things start to hurt or ache, it's time to give it a rest and give things a break. I think that's probably the vast majority of our recommendations when we see players and they are constantly wanting to compete or participate in these sports. And the bottom line is if they're doing certain things, it may be a technique. So that certainly having the expertise in a sport helps to ensure that individual's doing the correct approach. But sometimes it's just overuse and just doing too much, and then you just need to, most of the time, just need to rest it.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes we learn lessons along the hard way. I do a lot of, one of our therapists that I work with, Claire Koppel, she and I do some talks to the marathon training groups. We're mostly adults. Rarely would we get a just new high school graduate. But Claire, in the past couple talks, is, and I've heard it before, but the way she said it, the red light, green light, yellow light, and that's maybe a good thing for parents to use if a kid's experiencing something and it is hurting the next day after practice. That might be a big red light that okay, maybe you need to take a break and you know, how do we manage this? But if it's just something might ache a little bit during practice, might be a yellow light, and if it goes away, maybe they're okay. But to be, you know, very aware of that before it becomes, let the yellow lights become a red light.
When's the clinic going to be again?
April 16th and 17th, which is a Saturday and Sunday, and it'll be 8 to 4:30 at the Cancer Center on Piper Street. Mm-hmm. And then it'll be about 8 to 2:30 on Sunday.
Okay. And they can get more information by calling?
They can call 212-6489, or they could go to the Providence internet site, and then you go to Anchorage, and there's a link to our clinic there. Or you can call Thad Woodard's home. So there's plenty of ways to get information.
And the topics, again, you said this is kind of for everybody's teachers, anybody involved, but particularly teachers and students and coaches. Is that the
coaches? We have a lot of school nurses.
Uh-huh.
If you have a chance to look at the KSK website, I think there's a link to that, to the clinic. The first part on Saturday will be Dr. Robert Latta. He'll be talking about concussions. And if you're a parent or just watch the TV or the news or read the paper, it's kind of hard to get away from the stories that we're seeing with professional high school sports and little league sports. And then the second half of and then Dr. Flanham, who's at Orthopedic Physicians Anchorage, will talk about the spine following the concussive talk. And then Dr. Morin Powell will be talking about injuries in hockey, shoulder and knee injuries Saturday afternoon. And Sunday we have a talk on stretching. Kirk Schofield, we have a cross-sectional study of some ACL jump prevention programs. Talk on performance anxiety. And a taping session by Lynn Young, who's was very helpful and involved last year. She's an athletic trainer at OPA as well.
All right, so just one more time. It's April 16th and 17th. It's a Saturday and a Sunday. coming up. If you need more information, you can go to line1@kska.org for information and a link, or you can call the clinic directly, 212-6489. We've used the term overuse syndrome several times, or overuse injury. So let's try to define that a little bit better. What do we mean, and maybe some examples of what we're talking about?
Well, I think if we start looking at our bodies, we basically have a homeostasis where we're kind of balancing between breaking down and building up tissues. We constantly do that. One of the classic areas we talk about that is in bones. But it also occurs in tendons and muscles. But overuse injuries can involve any of those structures. And typically what happens is we're overtaxing the body's ability to repair itself. And so, as an example, as a tendon injury, we can sometimes see a patellar tendon get overtaxed. And when that happens in a younger person, one of the weak links to that is actually the attachment of the patella onto the lower leg bone. And that area, people have talked about Osgood-Schlatter's disease as an example. And so that's probably one of the classic things that we see. And what happens in that case is people that are doing a lot of running or jumping activities, they're transmitting all this force through the kneecap and down into the kneecap tendon, and this growth plate that's on the lower part of that bone is getting almost like a stress reaction or almost like a stress fracture. And that's where the pain is in these kids that are growing. Now, after we finish growing, in adults, we'll actually start to see tendonitis develop. Instead of that, that growth plate closes, that no longer is sort of the weak link in the system. And so now what happens is the tendon, the patellar tendon gets involved. And so we'll get what people call basketball knee or jumper's knee, and the patellar tendonitis is what occurs. So it just depends on where the stress gets concentrated at as to the injuries that are involved.
So that big muscle mass sitting in the front of your thigh comes down and attaches right there at the top of that your lower leg and causes it to extend, and the kneecap sits in the middle of that tendon. And so when particularly jumping injuries is where I think I see it. Is that
we've
that
seen
true?
A lot of basketball players, and a lot of not so much in runners. Runners will get patellar tendonitis issues a lot, but yes, a lot of basketball players.
What's another one? I'm gonna make a guess as you know, the heel comes into play a lot, and is that another area where this kind of traction overuse, not good healing occurs?
Sure.
The injury.
The area there that we typically see again in our younger patients, there is a growth plate that attaches the Achilles tendon. Of course, is the tendon that is involved there. And so that similarly can have damage to the tendon in our older group, but in the younger group, we'll get heel pain right in the back of the heel. And we call that, the fancy name there is Severs or Severs disease, depending on who you talk to. But that's basically what we call an apophysitis, or again, a sort of a stress injury to that growth plate in the back of the heel.
So these muscles at various places, and sound like particularly big muscles, are often attaching to bones that are not completely healed, or they get strained or stretched or injured, and then the more repetitive use of that just causes more and more pain, which is associated with direct pain, maybe some heat, and it hurts to do those maneuvers. Is that right?
Yeah, and I feel like if you can catch, I mean, the Osgood-Schlatter is one thing that stands out to me, that if they get in your clinic quick enough, you can... You know, it doesn't have to be the painful season that they endure, that they're crying after practice, and then their quad muscles might shut down, and they're just having a poor performing season, if you can get it quick enough. And the same thing with Severs, is just usually, I feel like if you turn the story back with the athlete, you can go back from the time they're in your clinic, and you can say in the past 3 to 4, 5, or 6 weeks, there was some increase of what we call the terrible twos, too much, too often, too frequent, too much load, too little rest. And then you can kind of isolate within maybe a few days to a week of when this started really kind of going downhill before they might have gone and seen Dr. Moore or someone and then come to your clinic. But I feel like if you can get a jump on it early, you can have a pretty good outcome.
I think, you know, the ounce of prevention beats a pound of cure approach is definitely appropriate. You know, we see, you know, I tend to see these patients much later after they've been dealing with this for a while. But if we can give them rest, and really that's what it, the in the grand scheme of things, if we can give them rest, they will heal that. The body has amazing abilities to heal, and if we just give them time to heal, they'll heal that area. But if we just keep stressing it, they'll continue to have issues, and they can get worse. Sometimes they even become surgical options. You know, there's a surgery that we will do sometimes, but pretty rarely.
Remind our listeners, 550-8433. If you've got calls or questions about sports injury, you've got a couple people here that can give us some very good answers. 550-8433. We'll be here for the next 45 minutes or so. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@ksk.org. On this Severs or Sievers disease, where the Achilles tendon attaches to the heel, where would the pain most likely be described? We've just talked about Osgood's Ladders, where it's right at the top of that shin bone. Where's the pain with Sievers disease?
Typically right back in the heel itself, posteriorly in the heel.
Mm-hmm.
Often with, again, with activities, and sometimes it'll progress to the point where it hurts even just to be walking.
Mm-hmm. I had a friend of ours call last night and wanted to ask about heel pain in dancers. So what about that? Is that a possible diagnosis, and what other things should be considered?
Well, it certainly could be. In dancing, there's certainly a high-impact load, and we'll see, again, when you're wearing dance shoes or ballet shoes, there's not much cushion there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it could definitely put increased strain in that area.
Bruises or something would be more on the bottom of the heel, but some kind of, I'm just guessing, but on the back side of the heel, you might get some irritation from mm-hmm. shoes, but probably not.
Not so much. The bottom of the foot can often get what we call plantar fasciitis, even some of the younger folks.
Right.
They'll often go hand in hand. When we tend to have issues with the Achilles tendon in that area, sometimes it hurts to stretch that. We do want to do eventually some stretching activities, but that can also lead to some issues, what we call plantar fasciitis, or some inflammation at the bottom of the foot. And that area can get irritated also.
Before we, you know, I think it's very important we talk about how you treat these overuse syndromes. We've kind of talked about prevention. We've kind of got around talked a little bit about what we might do. But before we talk about it more specifically, is there another common overuse injury you're seeing in athletes that we ought to talk about? Does anything come up in mind?
Probably the little league elbow. Of course, they call it, that was a bad term. What is it, the physically immature, or the irritated elbow, the physically immature, because the American Little League, probably with the overhead throwing sports of the young kids. A lot of times, some of the kids coming up that are the younger teens might not have the strength and the torso control that manifests into a shoulder problem. A lot of times it manifests into an elbow problem.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Moore is certainly the expert on that, but that's something that we see quite a bit of.
Well, I think we see shoulder and elbow injuries in our younger patients, and throwing injuries are certainly a big issue. And probably that was one of the impetus for that One Stop Sports Injuries. There's a website out that is called stopsportsinjuries.org. So I'm going to put my plug in here.
Yep.
For that now. But this was one of the founding members for this was actually Dr. Jimmy Andrews. And what he found and what we were seeing is there's just this huge explosion of a lot of baseball players that were having these overuse injuries in young kids with sometimes devastating injuries. And they were trying to figure out, well, why is this occurring? And especially in these throwing sports. Now, we may not see that quite so much up here in Alaska just because we probably aren't playing it year-round. But that was one of the findings that they – or one of the things that they found was that these individuals that were – throwing all year, that were playing baseball year-round, were definitely more predisposed to this problem. But some of this comes back to the technique, how the throwing athletes are throwing, probably one of the big issues now that I think people are looking at are some of the core area, core strengthening. Wally, maybe you can talk about that here a bit, but how that probably plays a role with some of our problems with some of our throwers. Yeah. But they can, yeah, they can get what we call little league elbow problems, where they can be a combination of injuries in the elbow. There's tension injuries on the inside part of the elbow where you can cause damage to what's called a medial collateral ligament. Probably a lot of our listeners have heard about Tommy John surgery, and some of our pitchers and even younger pitchers that are getting that surgery because they've just stretched out the inside ligament of their elbow. But they also get compression injuries on the outside part of the elbow. And especially in some of our younger folks, they can get really bad injuries to what's called the capitellum and get sort of bone fragments because the bone, again, is immature, doesn't have a great blood supply over there, and it can actually start getting injured and causing problems. So elbow pain and throwing athletes, and this is probably a good time to talk about this because we're starting to get into baseball season now. It's something that you want to be aware of. It's not something to ignore if, you know, players having pain in the shoulder, pain in the elbow. It's definitely something to address, and certainly pitch counts in Little League are now pretty mandatory, I think, all around. Mm-hmm. That's important. And even when we talk about when do we let certain players, you know, age-wise, when do you let somebody pitch certain pitches? The curveball is one example that probably puts a lot of increased strain on the medial elbow, and there's some recommendations that probably around the age 14 is probably a better time to let players start to throw the curveball. Before that time may not be a great time to be doing that.
We have a caller. Let's take this phone call, and then we'll kind of continue along. John, you're on line one.
Oh, okay. I had a skiing accident. I tore my rotator cuff. Well, apparently that's made up of four muscles and, I guess, four ligaments, but I have one complete tear and a partial tear. My question is that do I need surgery? And if I don't, can I repair that with physical therapy? So that's my question.
Sure. The rotator cuff are the muscles that sort of sit between the shoulder cap bone and the ball, and they help to lift your arm up or reach overhead. And some of our folks, most of the folks that I see with rotator cuff problems, it's sort of a wear and tear phenomenon. But some folks like yourself will have an injury where they tear those tendons. Now, does everyone that have a rotator cuff tear have to have surgery? No. We have some folks that are older that aren't real active, but a lot of folks are younger, are going to be doing a lot of things, especially reaching overhead activities, and so that is an issue. And once you've torn that rotator cuff completely, that might be more of a surgical option. Certainly it would be probably something to see your healthcare provider for and have them look you over. Everybody's, again, sort of has different expectations. The problem that you have once you've torn the rotator cuff is it's not going to heal. The tendon usually retracts back, and then that becomes an issue with persistent weakness and persistent pain.
So what I'm hearing is it depends a little bit on the age, what your expectations are as an individual, but it complete recovery after a rotator cuff tear is not going to happen without something being done. Is that fair to say, or am I over?
Pretty, yeah. I think you're going to find that you can compensate somewhat for retraining some of the muscles to strengthen them. So some people that are pretty sedentary may do okay, but a lot of the folks that I see are fairly active.
Yep.
And the issues that I do see with rotator cuff problems is that some of these tears can progress, and then they get really, sometimes if they're big tears, they get hard to fix.
Mm-hmm. If you have the surgery, what is the post-op on it? How long, and what is the follow-up on that? I mean, you had the surgery, and then...
It's long. It's a fairly lengthy recovery time. Wally, you can probably fill us in on some of that.
Yeah, I think a lot of, if I would say a average rotator cuff rehab post-op, looking at 3 to 4 months, and again, we're going to the... what is the outcome that the patient, you know, the lifestyle pre-surgery. But so that's just formal rehab. But say if you're an overhead athlete or an aggressive skier and doing some things, well, we're looking at maybe some issues that you're feeling it and dealing with it maybe for that first year. and follow-ups with the doctor to make sure. It is a tough, but at some point, I guess the decision's made by the patient. When do you start reclaiming your life back in terms of what you want to get to? Do you try to avoid surgery, but you're actually not able to participate and do those things that are very, you know, either important for your livelihood or your chosen sports that you like to do recreationally? But but if you have a good surgeon and you do your homework, I think you can have a good outcome.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks for your call, John. Let me remind our listeners again, you're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. My guests today are Anchorage orthopedist and sports medicine specialist, Dr. Jeff Moore, and Wally Wallace, who's a physical therapist that works for Anchorage Providence Sports Medicine and Physical Rehabilitation Services. If you've got questions or comments, our local number is 550-8433, 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752, and our email address is line1, and you have to spell that out, lineone at kska.org. Just a reminder, we usually repeat each Monday night at 7 o'clock. Tonight there's going to be a preemption of the program with a two-hour program called Running, which is covering these candidates and the ballot propositions for the upcoming elections April 5th here. So we will repeat at 9 o'clock tonight. The issue about healing, I mean, we've kind of also beat around the bush. I think anybody deals with athletes, they want to get back and going quicker, usually quicker than they need to, or they don't want to stop their performance. They don't want to stop doing what they're doing. And I've often used the general rule to just make my suggestion, whether it's listened to or not. And so I want you guys to comment on this, that if it hurts while you're doing it or it hurts more after you're doing it, you're probably going too fast and you need to back off and do other things. There's no reason why you can't do any activity that doesn't cause less pain and discomfort during the what you're doing or hurts more afterwards. Is that a reasonable kind of thing to tell people, or is it okay to play through and with the pain?
Well, I think as you described it, I was thinking of Claire's red light, green light, yellow light, and I think if it's that pain that you get up the next morning and it's really limiting your ability and not going away, those red light pains need to be dealt with. I think with what we're here to talk about with the coaches clinic also, or you know, that we need to be mindful of is kids. And a lot of times as an adult, a coach, you have to be very observant to see if that kid's experiencing pain, because socially they might not want to own up to it. You know, it's cool, it's okay, I'm not hurting. And I think we need just to be aware of little yellow light signs we see with kids, and as Dr. Moore said, sometimes rest is really got to be part of the equation, part of the homeostasis for performance. If you're an Olympic athlete, a professional athlete, you have days of rest. How we have lost that to the high school, middle school, youth athlete in some cases befuddles me, but I think you need to listen to your body.
I think there's certainly cross-training things that can be done, too. A lot of times we'll see a number of athletes that are doing some high-impact type of activities, and sometimes it's as simple as saying, well, let's take out the running here and maybe substitute in some bicycling for this or swimming for aerobic-type exercises, and that's oftentimes what works.
Okay. The other thing that comes up, and what I like to try to do on this program, is to talk about things that are invalid, no evidence. And so the question is, can healing be accelerated? Is there reliable information? Are there reliable products that we know work? Or do you want to comment on things that are being sold or marketed that really don't have any validity in this area?
You can go.
I would agree with you as far as I think most of it's just sort of time. And there are some areas, I mean, there are some things out there right now that people are looking at. One that comes to mind is sort of this PRP or platelet rich plasma that people are using, at least from a surgical standpoint, we're looking at it as, is this going to be something that might be helpful or beneficial? I think that's sort of in being investigated right now. Yeah, I can't offhand probably say this is definite. If somebody had the definite answer for that one and marketed that, then they'd probably
we'd all be doing it. Yeah, we'd all be doing it. Wally, any comments?
I think some of the modality choices in a athletic training room, a physical therapy clinic, in terms of the electrical stim, the ultrasounds, and the cold therapy, heat therapy. Yep. I think there's even there was some back and forth over 20 or 30 years of what settings, how long, how frequent, and that's just kind of asking the question of you know, what do we know today is current research based on.
Right.
But that, you know, you're a physician, you know how long that takes to get objective data. So I think one of the downfalls is sometimes we are a little too anecdotal. Mm-hmm. It might work over here for when I worked with this school, but it didn't work with this school, and I don't really have great objective measurements as to why. But the things that have been in the training rooms for a number of years, I think, do have some they're not just fly-by-night modalities or treatment choices.
Okay. Claire, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Yes, I injured my ankle by pulling my foot out of a muck boot. You know, it was a fitted, you know, like rubber boot. And it hurt like heck when I did. And I ended up with a bundle of connective tissue that broke loose from underneath my foot and then balled up to the inside of my ankle. It looked like, you know, I'd sliced off a half a golf ball and stuck it there. And then it's continued to kind of, there's still a knot there, and it kind of is moving. I can feel things a little bit every now and then, and it aches. So it's keeping me from being on the elliptical trainer and jazzercise, things that I like to do.
Okay. And so we'll see what we can suggest here. We're trying to conjure up what this looks like.
What
happened to you?
Where is the swelling at, or where did it ball up at?
It just inside of that little narrow or the shallow place between your ankle and your Achilles tendon.
Yeah, kind of in the arch of the foot?
No, it's on the side of my foot. So I think these connective tissues came from underneath, in front of my heel, and then kind of, it's like you snap the end of a spring loose, and it's kind of balled up further up my foot between my ankle and my heel. Towards the back, parallel to my foot.
Well, there are some injuries that you can get on the inside part of your foot that will, especially in the what we call the posterior tibial tendon, that can get damaged or frayed. It's pretty rare to actually rupture that, but you can get some stretching of that. I'm sorry.
How can I figure out what I've done?
Probably go see your primary provider, and that would be one that sounds like it might be more of an injury that probably needs to be investigated.
Yeah, I think so. And so can they? I actually did go see my internist about it.
Yep, good.
And at that point, I was just trying to make sure I didn't hurt myself by, you know, going on vacation for a long plane flight. But so I probably need to be referred to a different type of doctor who's more of a specialist.
Yeah, if it's persisting and you didn't get a good answer the first time, I think it's a good idea to perhaps see somebody like an orthopedist or a podiatrist. Some of the podiatrists might be able to help you.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thanks very much.
You bet.
Goodbye.
All right, Jean, you're on line one. Oops, I did that too.
I have a dumb question.
Okay.
Well, we have a dumb answer for you.
I don't think they're dumb questions, but.
Well, I don't have any. At a rather advanced stage, I am very active, and I have no problems at all with my knees, except the inside kind of muscles on both legs hurt a lot sometimes at night. there are no visible varicose veins. Mm-hmm. But it's sort of the muscles just on the inside of each knee.
By the knee joint area.
Well, it's sort of towards the rear, more than...
To the backside, maybe? Yeah,
well, it's not really the backside. It's just the inside.
Yeah. That's a common area that we'll start to see people wear out their joint a little bit on.
That wouldn't surprise me.
So sometimes it'll feel like a muscle pain because it kind of radiates down to that area, the inside and the back a little bit. But that's often an area that can sort of just sort of wear and tear. That's a real common area of wear and tear in our knee joints.
Not a lot of muscle in that area either. There's a limited number of things there.
Now, Jeff, I'm the gene that swears by your carpal tunnel surgery, too.
Okay. Well, thanks. But, if it's bothering you, sometimes, you know, changing activities, and that's probably an area, you know, we do see in sort of our more mature athletes, there are issues with arthritis or where the joints are starting to wear out. But what we do recommend for people is to stay active. And sometimes it's, again, modifying things. You know, arthritis definitely is something that just sort of is a wear and tear phenomenon that we tend to start wearing some of our joints out. But we used to think that, well, maybe we should just rest that and not be so active and not stress those joints. But now we're changing that mode and think we should probably at least do activities as we can. Again, that does a couple of things. One is it keeps probably some of our weight down a little bit so we don't get to be too heavy and put extra stress on the joints. But it's good also just for overall general health.
I swim 5 days a week, so.
Very good.
Good. Yeah.
Pardon me?
No, that's excellent to keep doing that.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. I just couldn't figure out why it felt like muscles rather than the knee. Thank you.
All righty. Let me remind our listeners once again, this is Line 1, your health connection. We're talking about sports medicine and sports injuries. My guests are Wally Wallace. Have I been giving your name wrong all day? That's what you were trying to tell me.
You can call me Wally.
Wally Wallace.
But it's Wallace Wilson.
Wallace Wilson.
But I go by Wally.
I got it wrong. I apologize.
That's okay.
And Dr. Jeff Moore, our orthopedic surgeon.
My name's pretty simple.
Yeah.
If you've got questions or comments, please give us a call at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. And our toll-free number 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@kska.org. Yeah. Stan, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
I have a question, and it's reference to sports injury and time limit. Is there a time limit to get a chest muscle repaired from lifting too much weight, torn pec?
Your pectoralis, so the main chest muscle, it's called your pectoralis major, and it can tear off of its attachment onto the upper arm. Doesn't happen very often, but we do see it in some of our weightlifters, especially if you're lifting a lot of weight. Now,
right?
Yeah, most of our folks will have that repaired because it does cause some problems with deformity but mostly with lifting. But if you don't, you kind of have to get that done fairly soon. It does retract back. You can repair those late. Chronic repairs don't do probably quite as well. My chronic, that's probably a couple of months after injury.
Okay. All right. Well, that was it. Thank you.
You know, David, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
I've not been aging gracefully, actually. about 7 years ago, I was still trying to go ahead and compete at kind of a college level, and I blew out my ACL when I was skiing on my left knee. And I did have that repaired, although there was some question as to whether or not the repair was successful. They measured like about 11 millimeters of movement in the knee pre-surgery and 11 millimeters afterwards. But my question is actually about my right knee, which I've been probably overutilizing to kind of go ahead and make up for it. And it's when I'm biking in particular, when I bike without clipless pedals, I bike quite a bit. It's not a problem, but when I've been doing a fair amount of biking in my clipless pedals, I get a lot of knee pain in my right knee, on the just above the knee in the middle.
The posterior right knee in the middle, what we call the popliteal posterior area. It makes sense when you, I think the difference is when you're clipping in, what that does mechanically is allows us, of course, to use our hamstrings to advance the pedal stroke. So something that you're clipping in, you're probably firing your hamstrings. You said your right was your unaffected knee. Is that correct?
Correct.
And your left was your surgical. And you might be compensating with that knee more so to make up for your left. Have you ever videotaped or gone to a cycle shop and on a trainer and videotaped your pedal stroke and what your heel does relative to your left versus right?
No, I haven't.
Sometimes it can be you can shift your pedal cleats, you know, fore or aft, or even elevate it or lower it, depending, or elevate the opposing side. That might be something that balances you out. It might be something fairly subtle, but if you had a maybe went to a bike shop and got on a roller or a trainer and had somebody look at you or videotape, you might check that heel position and how your relative position is relative to your left surgical knee.
Okay. I find it odd that it doesn't happen when I'm not using the clipless pedals.
It happens when you use your clip pedals, correct?
Correct.
So yeah.
When I'm on just regular flat pedals.
Right. So when you're using your regular flat pedals, you're basically just using your quadriceps and you're pushing. You don't really have much of a motor component or strength ability of your hamstrings because you can't negatively pull that pedal back up to the top of the stroke. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So when you're more of a quadricep dependent without being clipped in, and that's why to me it makes sense that it might show up when you're clipped in and it wouldn't when you're not clipped in.
Okay. I guess, you know, kind of a follow-on question, I guess, jumping back towards the other knee. I don't know. I guess I'm wondering whether or not I really should go in for another knee surgery. The surgeon that I went into was kind of ambivalent about it. But when I was working with my physical therapist after the surgery, she did make a point of saying that she thought I was physically strong, you know, and but wasn't progressing at a rate with my injured left knee, as somebody who had a similar ACL surgery, who she thought wasn't as athletic, and she thought that maybe something was a little bit askew there. And I guess I'm wondering, how is it that people objectively go ahead and analyze that, and is there the prospect that, given if I went under the knife again, what are the prospects for going ahead and having a successful surgery? And I guess maybe that's a little bit more detailed question than you can answer here.
Well, yeah, sure. I think that one would have to be individualized, but just to kind of talk in general on ACL surgeries, and the ACL, it was what we call the anterior cruciate ligament, is one of the four main ligaments in the knee. We often hear about it being injured because all these athletes that get injured are having surgery and then they're out for the season. But basically, when you have that ligament injured, the problem that you run into is instability. The knee is unstable or feels unstable, not from just regular walking, or sometimes even just running activities are okay, but it's usually the pivoting or twisting things. That's where the ACL comes into role. But again, a lot of our athletes, that's very important, so we fix those. And when you have an injury to that ACL, you can't really just repair. You actually have to reconstruct it. You have to put a new ligament in there, or a new tendon. From somewhere, you have to take that tendon tissue and then reconstruct that ligament. So I don't, you know, not having known what you had done, or how long ago was your surgery? Was it a while ago?
It was a while ago.
Yeah.
I've been reluctant to go back under the knife, but it's never really felt as as strong as, well, clearly as my right. And I guess the thing that clued me in that maybe it wasn't quite as successful was he actually had a machine that tests, in order to try and provide some objective measure, it tests the amount of movement in that knee, and it didn't change. And
yeah, there are some measurement tools we use. One's called a KT1000 device that can actually measure the...
KT1000.
And it measures the laxity or looseness with something called a Lachman's test. It'll actually give us numbers to kind of quantify, like you said. And certainly, that does give us some clues. I think for yourself, one of the questions I think would be, how unstable does my knee feel now? Does it feel like if I do things, can I trust it to turn or twist? Do those activities bother me? Because if that's the case, then certainly that might be an issue. Bracing works so far, it probably doesn't necessarily prevent the knee from buckling or going out, but it does give some feedback and help some folks. But if you're real active, that sometimes happens where the ligament just didn't heal correctly or it got retorn. And so sometimes revision ACL surgeries are done. Did that answer your question?
It did, yes. Thank you much.
Okie doke. Thanks for your call, David.
Bye.
Adam, you're on line one.
Yeah, thank you. My question for the orthopedist is this. A couple years ago, I had a spiral fracture of my tibia about 6 inches above my ankle, and Dr. Robert Hall from Orthopedic Physicians Anchorage put a metal rod in my tibia from the bottom of my knee to basically my ankle, and it worked really well, and I recovered just great. But now I'm experiencing some pain just below my kneecap, which I'm assuming is where the rod went in, and also some pain, although not as severe, down at the bottom, you know, just above my ankle, which is where I guess the bottom of the rod is. So my question is, with a piece of hardware in your leg, is it normal to experience some discomfort, even several years after the surgery? And if not, is that something I need to call my orthopedist about, or is that, fairly normal?
You can get some irritation from the rod. The first thing is make sure that the bone is healed, and it sounds like yours had, so that was successful. But occasionally, especially in those tibial rods, they can be irritating up because we do put them in just below the knee joint, kind of about in that kneecap tendon area. And then occasionally those can irritate in that area. So if it does bother you, that can be a reason why. And sometimes we, in those cases, we'll take the hardware out. So yeah, I'd follow up with your orthopedist and they can assess that.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time.
Yep. Thanks for your call, Adam. Wally, are there going to be any DVDs or video conferencing or anything like that that people could do to follow up or have better access to the conference that's coming up?
Well, our hope was yes is the answer. And the time is, I was hoping at this point to have last year's video taped in conference. We're trying to get this year's condensed down to some things that will be available over the internet. I need to check with the IT folks at Providence to see what our capability is and how much data we can put out there. We are going to video conference this year to Providence facilities in Valdez and Seward. And we're hoping to see, Valdez just got back from spring break, I think last week, to see what their teachers and coaches and parents in the community can do if they want to gather at the facility and broadcast live and be a via kind of a webinar. They could actually have the ability to ask questions to the presenters. And again, if you're a nurse or a teacher, that video conference would qualify for continuing education credit. But the long-term goal is to get that also in little vignettes of media presentable for the common person to go out there and just access it via the web.
Cool. Dana, you're on line one.
Hi.
Howdy.
I have a, you know, of course, a specific thing that is my problem, but I also want to, I'm thinking as a generalization that maybe is something that could help some other people too, hopefully. And that is that I'm physically active, and I'm in my 50s, and I have been active for a long time, and I do rock climbing and cross-country skiing and bicycling and stuff like that. But several years ago, I had a job where I used a two-handle drill and for a period of time, and I injured my shoulder to where it really caused me discomfort, but I didn't have surgery or anything like that. And now I've lost range of motion in this shoulder, and it causes me discomfort when I do some of my physical activities that I enjoy doing. And I'm wondering, is there any hope for me, or is it too late and have I messed it up forever? You know, I guess is that something you can work with there? Or?
Yeah, sure. The questions, it almost sounds like, as far as your shoulder, is that you may have had some problems with your rotator cuff. And again, all rotator cuff problems are not, in fact, most of them are not tears, but there's sort of a spectrum of injuries that happen where especially when you do overhead activities constantly or doing things that we're doing a lot of reaching out activities, you can pinch that area and get some irritation. We call this bursitis or tendonitis, and that's the majority of folks that we see with that. Now, as time goes on, sometimes those do progress to tears, but some folks will also have some irritation, and then it hurts to lift their arm up or reach, and they don't do it, and they start losing motion, and we get something called adhesive capsulitis or frozen shoulder. Wally, if you want to talk about how we treat that, that might be...
Yeah, the adhesive capsulitis or frozen shoulder is something for women have a higher tendency than men. If there's no story to tell in terms of maybe your overhead activities, yours has a history of a job position that might lend itself to that. But the rehab for that is basically getting back as pain-free as we can that range of motion. And then also working on to establish the rotator cuff strength specifically. Something we always look at that's often the layperson might overlook, not think about, is the scapula or the shoulder blade. That muscle in the back is just inherently related to any shoulder. If I reach my hand up in the air, my scapula has to be able to go in the right position to allow my hand to reach up in the air. And postural awareness and scapular positioning and strengthening are also something that we address. But a frozen shoulder can be a tough thing to get over, but it can also, you know, conservatively get out of the woods with it.
And I don't think I have anything as serious as perhaps, I mean, or I'm not describing anything that's that serious as what you're talking about. Frozen shoulder sounds pretty serious, but I mean... So you think there's a possibility that I can work through something like this just with, I don't know, a chiropractor or with realignment somehow or stretching or?
I'd get to a physical therapist.
Oh, okay. A physical, okay.
Yeah, that's what you want.
You got to settle the irritation down first and then kind of work that motion.
Well, great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Well, here's one that I think is important. We just got a couple of minutes. There are two questions. One about when is it appropriate to start weight training in children under 18 or before puberty is really what this person wants. And the other one is, what about stretching? I'm hearing myself all kinds of things about dynamic stretching, what's good stretching, what's negative about stretching. So quickly, if you don't mind, talk about those.
Well, I'll start, and then on both points, I'll refer to Dr. Moore. In terms of the weightlifting, I think you could test that the pediatrics they shy away from heavy lifting, and we have to really separate weightlifting from bodybuilding. When the gentleman called in about his pectoralis tear, the pectoralis muscle is the big macho muscle, get a big chest. Well, even in the swimming population, it used to be that. But if you're trying to do weightlifting specific to sport, you should be doing weightlifting specific to sport, dictated by your coaches, and something that's hopefully complementary. That being said, there's, you know, to rest some muscle groups and to not overtrain. But weightlifting is fine. Higher repetition, less frequency, not every day, a couple of 3 days a week, and make it in design with your specific to sport that you're not overdoing it on a day that you might have a heavy training day. In particular, I'm not. I'll go back to Dr. Moore on this in terms of overstressing growth plates, weightlifting. If you comments on that.
Well, I think in the pre-adolescent kids, there's probably not much point in weightlifting per se, but it probably comes more into line maybe in, you know, 13, 15-year-old boys, which certainly is an age that we'll see, again, kids are starting to lift there, or even before that somewhat. But, yeah, I think you have to be somewhat careful. Real heavy lifting activities in our younger kids especially does put more strain on the growth plates. And so we have to be careful there. It's probably more appropriate to do lighter weights, more repetitions. But again, like you say, working more on the sport-specific activities. And that's where I think having appropriate coaching and guidance is appropriate for those individuals.
And the second part with stretching, actually one of our talks on Sunday, Dr. Kirk Schofield will be specifically addressing stretching because there is a lot of maybe poor research out there. And that's I think that's a pretty true statement is static stretching. It shows that there's benefits on some like post-activity stretching, but there's actually maybe a decrease in performance with muscle response for speed, very ballistic events. There are a lot of types of stretching, you know, ballistic partner stretching, just a general warm-up stretching, long-held static stretches. And it can be appropriate, especially, you know, we see people in a rather biased population. By the time they've come to our clinic, they're hurt or for the most part. And stretching is quite often a component of something we would do. You talk about some of these kids that have the Sever's disease and the Osgood-Schlatter, there might be a growth issue, growth plate, or, you know, irritation to stretching, or maybe back off for a while, just let it rest and heal. And I'll go back to Dr. Moore again on that with the stretching in terms of irritation.
Yeah, I would just back up what Wally says. There you go.
All right, so we really, I have a couple people waiting, but I really don't have enough time, I don't think, to get into another question. What's the bottom line? What do we want to leave people with as a big message, one or two things that people are going to recall out of this program today?
Well, I would like to, I'm going to put my plug back into this website, www.stopsportsinjuries.org. It's got a lot of information. It's really a website that was designed in conjunction with a couple of different groups. One of them that I'm involved with is American Orthopedic Society for Sports Medicine. But it has some great tips for specific sports. There's about 20 different sports in there that you can look for prevention injuries, how to prevent injuries, and it has information both for coaches and for parents and also just for everybody in general, even healthcare providers.
Okay. Thanks very much. Wallace, my apologies for getting your name wrong through at least half the show, and Dr. Jeff Moore, thanks for taking the time out today for the program. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Line 1's going to return next week at April 4th at 2 p.m. Our guests will be Dr. Daniel Simons and Dr. Christopher Chambers. They've written a book called The Invisible Gorilla. You might want to look it up on YouTube if you haven't heard about it. It's an interesting little bit of information, and we're going to learn how our brain really works, not how we think it works. Pat Yak is Vice President of APTI News and Public Media. Kristen Spack engineered the program today. Thanks for listening, especially to those you called or emailed, and I apologize for those we didn't get to. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1, Your Health Connection, is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available on our website at kska.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.